Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 280, recorded on December 12th, 2015. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by Smile and the wonderful Text Expander 5, which improves your communication and helps you type less with snippets that you create. We'll talk more about them later on in the show. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing all right and staying warm.
Sweet.
How about you?
I'm doing well and also staying warm. It's a chilly 57 here in California.
I don't know how you survive.
I know. It's tough. And I hear you have snow.
Well,
is it a lot
really
of snow?
It's sticking very much.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's snowing. And
that's fun.
It's supposed to snow all day. And then, hey, tomorrow, sun comes out.
Cool. Yeah, last year I went back to Chicago in January. It was the worst decision I've ever made. I'm not going to pretend like I missed the snow this year. I'm just going to be happy that I don't have to deal with it.
Well, you know, it's the little victories.
Yeah, and Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Hanging in there.
Sweet.
This is my second podcast today. I've been very productive.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, I was up at 7:30.
That's an ungodly hour.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that ungodly. So there are other hours that are even more so.
Pumping coffee to keep going.
That's good. It's always fun. All right. So the first, my favorite story of this week is that Apple released tvOS 9.1.
Woo!
For our new Apple TVs.
Michael got the thing that we said never would happen.
Well, I'm glad you said it. Because I was going to, if you did.
We were wrong, Jeff.
We were, but...
I won't hold it against you guys.
I can still sleep at night.
I understand. I'm very happy. It was actually... I think that morning I was looking at my iPad and my iPhone and thinking, do I really need the remote app on the home screen, on my first home screen now that I don't ever use it because my Apple TV sucks? And I left it there, and the Tooth Fairy granted me my wish.
Then you were vindicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I found that it worked, I was like, huh, didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. It's a nice surprise.
I was surprised I didn't get a text from Michael.
I couldn't come up with an emoji that expressed my emotions quite perfectly, so I just decided to leave it to the show.
Left it. So you could gloat on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed only right.
That's appropriate.
Yeah. That seems
appropriate. Still didn't get Bluetooth keyboard support. What's up with that though?
That is a bummer. They have to be thinking about adding that.
I think they probably think Bluetooth keyboard within Apple TV is stupid.
Well,
I have a feeling you're right, Adam.
There is that. I never understood it fully, but
I don't agree. But
it was a nice thing. It was certainly a nice thing to have, but I never found it useful.
I think it could be useful, and I think Apple's just being Apple about it.
Yeah, it's a little bit too techy.
Saying a TV's supposed to use a remote, and that's it. And you know, and here's the remote app if you want a keyboard.
Yeah. Well, the even more interesting than just adding the support, so you don't have to update any of your devices other than the Apple TV. So if you have the remote app...
Yeah, that was weird, right?
It just suddenly started working once you update your TV.
That to me made it more frustrating the fact that they didn't have it on day one because it was obviously a software thing in tvOS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I just hope it wasn't something that it was like, oh, hey, Joe, can you also like flip the bit on that pref file so we can, so it works again? Oh, yeah, cool.
Like somebody just forgot. Oops.
Whoops. Yeah, for like 3 months.
Forgot to set the build switch.
Yeah, totally.
My bad.
Even cooler. Eddie Q who we can blame for his, it was his bad, I guess. Maybe.
Sure. Let's blame it on Eddie. We'll just blame it on Eddie. He's in the right pay scale to take some blame.
Sure. Yeah. He has stated, I believe it was the same, was it the same day, saying that, that they're working on a new version of the app that will give the full functionality of the Siri remote on your phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that. That's good. Because immediately somebody asked me about that. It's like, but I can't use Siri on it.
Yeah. So you gotta wonder, the way that the app touchscreen works is slightly different from the way the Siri remote trackpad works, other than the fact that there's a physical click button and the Siri. Right. I wonder if they're going to update the motions of how that works in addition to adding Siri and all of that. But it's cool. It's clear that they have, this is an admission that they're sticking to it. They're going to stick with the remote app for a while at least.
Yeah. Now it makes me wonder if they were already working on the new remote app and they thought it was going to be ready.
Maybe
within a couple of weeks of the Apple TV launching. So they're like, yeah, don't flip that bit switch on the old remote app because we're going to replace that app anyway. And then I wonder if they ran into issues, and because it's taking longer, they're like, okay, we better push the update, otherwise people are going to get really irked. You know what I mean?
I kind of like this theory.
It's a fun theory.
Well, I mean, it's that kind of now, I mean, throwing that out there, it's my total speculation, but I mean, that would make sense. Then you kind of, in my mind, it resolves Apple's weird decision, right? It's like, okay, the remote app's almost, the new remote app with Siri support and all this stuff's almost ready. Let's not update it day one because we're just going to replace the app. And then everybody's going to be like, why are you replacing the app? 2 weeks after you released the thing.
Yeah. And, well, I don't know. That even that doesn't make sense.
Well, it depends on how hard it was to implement support on the new app in tvOS
just for basic remote app. Yeah.
I mean, if there was some engineering effort, some hours spent doing that, because I don't think it was just a simple flipping a bit. So let's assume there was some hours that needed to be put in, and they're like, don't put the hours in on that because we're just going to replace it in 2 weeks.
That seems more likely. They probably had a lot on their plate. Obviously, when they announced the device, there was some lead time. There was, a month or so before they actually released the thing. And of course, they put out the developer kits, sort of indicating that they needed to round out the software a bit more. And so they probably just had other things they needed to fix up. Obviously, there were other omissions to tvOS as well. And we've seen those additions in 9.1. So in addition to the remote stuff, they've also added support finally for Apple Music via Siri.
That made me happy. I'm surprised at how happy that made me.
It's very nice, yeah.
Yeah, I thought I'd be like, oh, cool, now I can do that. But I was actually a little bit giddy, maybe inappropriately so.
It's pretty cool because you can, you can do all the things that you could before with your iPhone in terms of Apple Music, but putting it on the TV makes that functionality more interesting for some reason. Saying play the hits of the 80s or something like that to your TV and then having that come out of your living room speakers is pretty cool.
It was cool. I was so surprised I could do it. When I first tried it out, I kind of choked and I'm like, I don't know what to ask Siri to play.
Yeah.
And so finally I'm like, play some Stevie Wonder for me. And I have no idea what Stevie Wonder that came to mind. But hey.
Probably because of the Christmas ad.
Oh, my God. Oh, Apple, you sneaky bastards.
Right?
Yep, I bet that's it. Yeah, but it totally worked. And so I jammed out to some Stevie Wonder for a little while. And it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, see, that didn't excite me as much as Sonos bringing Apple Music support. Since I have a Sonos system, it's like, that was a bigger one for me because that's how I like to listen to my music.
Now, how does that work? How does the Sonos support work? Is it they just added the? Is that an API that Apple had?
Apple Music app. It's beta right now, so it's officially coming out on the 15th. But because I had been a Beats customer, they invited a bunch of old Beats customers into the beta program. So I got it just a couple days ago, just like 2 days ago. You know, and we're only 3 days away from the public beta release, which I think is on the 15th. And so there's just an app. You go into the Sonos application, and there's now an Apple Music app. And then you just have access to everything that you have in Apple Music and cool. in iTunes. And you just pick it, and it plays through your Sonos. So you don't have to have your Apple TV on or anything like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
iOS 9.1 was also released on Tuesday.
9.2.
Yep. And yeah. What did I say? 9?
You said 9.1, which is in the notes, and that's tvOS.
Oh, yeah.
I think you did a copy.
Yeah, I did. I did a brain fart. Yeah, 9.2. And I guess it adds, well, for one, it adds the ability to use Safari extensions in the little web sheets that come up in third-party apps. So if you're in Tweetbot and you click on a link and for some reason you need to log in, you can now use 1Password, for example, in there.
Sweet. That's so awesome.
It is very cool. There are a ton of other bug fixes, functionality fixes. I personally haven't been affected by any of the fixes.
I have a big one for people related to something that's listed in here. And I know Jeff did a piece on NumberSync with AT&T.
Oh, yeah.
A bigger deal.
How's that work?
NumberSync.
What's the NumberSync? Tell us about NumberSync.
Jeff?
All right. So NumberSync, you know how you can do FaceTime calling and you can do handoff or phone calls like to your iPad when your iPhone is nearby and on the same network?
Yep.
Well, what NumberSync does is it breaks the link to your phone. So you can use your iPad or iPod Touch or your Mac as if it were your iPhone, even if your iPhone isn't on the same network. So you can send and receive calls from any of your iOS devices or your Mac.
Even if it's turned off, right?
Even if your iPhone is turned off.
Uses yeah. Wi-Fi calling.
Right. And so on your devices that don't have the phone app, which would be anything other than an iPhone, it just runs through FaceTime or through the FaceTime app.
It's very cool.
Yeah, and it works well. I set it up and tried it out. Setting it up is
it's a nightmare.
Oh my man, yeah.
Is it? It's not just a switch you turn on?
No. Mm. You have to jump back and forth between your devices to get this up and running.
Yep. That's a pain.
You do some steps on your iPhone, then you go over to your iPad. Then you go back to your iPhone, you go back to your
iPad. But it's not a situation.
And it gives you a code that you have to then put into your iPhone to authorize each device that you want to be able to make phone calls from.
So I know that so T-Mobile has had this feature for a few months already, and the way it worked for me is I recall it, you go into the settings on your phone, you flip a switch, and then I think it was something like you get a code presented to you on your other devices and you type that code in.
That's right.
So it's got it. The same sort of back and forth
exact
thing.
Same back and forth thing. Why AT&T calls it NumberSync, I don't know. Because AT&T or T-Mobile just calls it like Wi-Fi calling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care why they say NumberSync either. Because that doesn't...
It's a marketing BS.
Yeah, but the,
it's
but
just
the marketing,
Wi-Fi calling.
Yeah, but the marketing doesn't reflect what's actually happening. I mean, when I first heard the term NumberSync, I was like, why do I need that? Because iCloud is already syncing all of my contacts
between my
devices. And then I read a little more, and I'm like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
But so here's the really cool thing for AT&T customers, and Michael, maybe you've had this with T-Mobile, but if you go into the Apple Watch app, into the phone settings, after you've turned on NumberSync, you can now turn Wi-Fi calling on for your Apple Watch.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Which means that if you have your Apple Watch and you don't have your phone with you and you're connected to a known Wi-Fi network,
no way.
You can still make and receive phone calls.
Yeah, I didn't even notice I had that. Yeah, I do have that. That's really cool.
But again, there's a lot of caveats there. You have to be connected to a known Wi-Fi network, and there's whole issues with that I've been having. Like, on my home Wi-Fi network, for some reason, I can only connect to my 2.4 gigahertz to, like, my guest network. If I'm connected to my main network on my iPhone, and I turn off my phone, my Apple Watch will not connect to my network. If I switch over on my iPhone to my guest network, it works fine. I can turn my iPhone off and my watch will connect to that known network. So I don't know what's going on there. I can't figure that out. But
strange.
As long as you, and the way you know if your Apple Watch is connected to a known Wi-Fi network without your phone being available, when you go into the settings glance on the Apple Watch, it'll say connected, and then you'll see a little green, like, cloud icon. Normally, you see connected, and it's a little green phone icon.
Yep.
If you see the red, you know, phone icon with a slash, then you know you're not connected to a known Wi-Fi network. So, it should work, but I have a feeling it's a little funky.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always been a little bit funky.
But the dream is there. You should be able to, like, you know, leave your phone at home and go to the gym, and if you have connected with your phone in the past to the Wi-Fi network at the gym, your Apple Watch should be able to recognize that, and you should be able to send and receive phone calls if you've enabled this number sync or you have the T-Mobile Wi-Fi calling thing.
And would that also include SMS?
That I don't know.
I don't know. But I did like that.
I think this is strictly a phone thing.
Could be.
I bet it would work with SMS as well.
I think that works. I think that works over a known Wi-Fi network anyway.
Hmm.
Without this feature, this number sync thing and the Wi-Fi calling thing is specifically related to phone calls. There are a number of things you can do with the Apple Watch over a known Wi-Fi network without your phone that are unrelated to this. And I think messaging has always been one of those things.
Yeah, iMessages for sure.
Yeah, iMessages. I don't know about SMS or not.
Yeah. Yep. Anything else? I had one cool thing. So you probably never noticed it, but it used to be in the previous version, if you went into the settings app, you'd be presented with it at the very top of the list with the little search field at the top. And there would be a very slight momentary delay. And then after that, it would jump down just past, I don't know, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or something like that, so that I was constantly pressing the wrong button that I wanted to get into Bluetooth settings, but it would jump down just as I was going to click it, and it would jump me into something else. So now they've finally fixed it so that when you open settings, it's kind of stupid still, where you open settings and it shows you the setting, the search field at the top, and then it jumps so that the search field is hidden. So you have to scroll up to find it. But at least it's a little bit better, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why they have
what
to make
up
a jump
in general with the hidden search field.
What is up with it?
Does Apple not realize how much that screws up most customers? I cannot tell you. I wish I had like 10 cents for every time I've shown somebody how to find search within an app because it has to be hidden for some dumb reason.
Or
somebody comes to me and like, I really wish this app had search. And I'm like, it does.
It's right there. You just have to know that it's there and scroll up.
That is actually kind of
stupid. It's like the worst UI thing decision ever.
And it doesn't happen in the phone app.
Yeah, I guess they're hoping it's going to become a common thing, like the swipe to refresh. Like,
that's so dumb. Why the hell?
People still don't know swipe to refresh.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's because Johnny Ive is in control of UI. Or Johnny Ive's team. It's a team of people who don't know what UI is. They know what design is, so they make very beautiful objects that aren't very functional.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think Apple had this hope that it would become a common maybe a better example is that it would become common, like pinch to zoom, right? Like,
yeah, it would have to be that common for everybody.
And people will assume it works everywhere now.
But that's just stupid. There's no, there's not one damn reason for it to be hidden, other than like a very aesthetic, like Zen thing.
Well, yeah, because you don't have to have a button. You don't have to have an icon. Like, you don't have to have a little magnifying glass somewhere.
Well, the way that it, I'll tell you the way it worked in iPhone OS 1 in the Contacts app. Your phone number was hidden above the fold. However, in the index, the right-hand index that gives you the alphabet, there was also a little magnifying glass right above the A.
Yep.
To indicate...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
...that you had a little search field up there. And I believe that might have been hidden. I really want an original iPhone to keep around to just poke it. And
I have one here.
Yeah?
I can just plug it in. It's not charged up. But we'll find out before the end of the show.
Okay.
If I can find a 30-pin cable.
Oh, I have one here. You want me to send it to you?
Yeah, just hand it over the table.
Okay, cool. Let's see, what else do we have here? WatchOS 2.1 was released. I do not know what has been changed. Well, relevant to me. There are a bunch of language fixes and updates. Support for right to left user interface. Yeah, a lot of foreign language stuff. And I guess some issues with bug fixes. Some people have said that it's faster. I don't know that that's true.
I haven't noticed anything personally.
Yeah, I haven't noticed any performance improvements.
Okay, but 9.1 or 2.1 is released, so go get that if you haven't.
As I put on Twitter, Apple updated all the things.
They updated all the things, yes. Let's see here. Oh, I have stuff out of order. I was being careless with my notes. So, yeah, we're going to talk about Apple maybe doing an event. Apple's next event. But before we get to that, that's called a tease. We're going to talk about our sponsor this week, which is Smile with Text Expander. So check them out, smilesoftware.com/TIOSS. Text Expander improves your communication and helps you type faster through snippets, which expand out to pretty much anything you want. This can be as short as an email address or as long as an entire paragraph or form, complete with fields that you can fill in with their special fill-in fields. And, of course, the snippets that you create, they work in every single app on your Mac. So Text Expander helps you increase your consistency by creating snippets for common email responses. You can make a snippet for meeting notes. You can use a snippet for referencing and improving your hiring processes. There are so many different things. Like if you send out an email, stock replies, that sort of thing, you can have your stock reply with a little fill-in field thingy that you want. Some of the things that I use Text Expander for, my address, my phone number. There are so many times when someone texts me, "Hey, can I get your address?" And In a time that is probably inhuman to actually type out your address, I can send it back to them, and oftentimes they go, "Wow, that was fast," because I have it locked and loaded in Text Expander. That's very nice. I think I just type AADDR, something like that. And so email address, phone number, address, tons of other things. I use it a lot for the show stuff. So when I send off emails to let people know that, you know, sponsors have happened, or when I'm actually posting the show notes, or that just, you know, in general, it has improved my ability to be consistent with this. I think I've mentioned it before, but there were a few times where listeners would send me an email saying, "Hey, you posted the show, but it's not showing up in my podcast feed." And that's because I was doing it all by hand with copy and paste from the previous episode, and I thought I got it, but I didn't get it. And now with Text Expander, I never miss it because there's a fill-in field for it right there, and it fills in both spots that makes it work. Even cooler, you can use the snippets that you create on your Mac, on your iPhone, and your iPad with Text Expander Touch. They have a Text Expander custom keyboard, which means finally the dream has come true that you can actually use Text Expander in all apps on your iOS device as well. So
it's a beautiful thing.
It's so great. Snippets are automatically synced over Dropbox or iCloud. It's up to you to choose whichever you prefer. One of the things that I really like is that they nudge you to use the snippets. So if you type something out that you already have a snippet for, it says, "Hey, dude, you have a snippet. You just wasted a bunch of time typing all that out. You could have just used the snippet." And they remind you what the snippet is, and that's on the Mac with the little notifications. And if you want, you can even have it look at what you type, and it will actually start suggesting things that can be snippets, things that you type over and over again. So actually, that's one of the things that I would suggest is if you haven't already downloaded Text Expander, go grab it. There's a free trial at smilesoftware.com/TIOSS. And, make up a couple different emails or different snippets. I would recommend, address, phone number, email address, that sort of thing. And then just leave it on your Mac. And as you go throughout your day, it will suggest things that you type over and over again. And then you'll realize how much time you could be saving with Text Expander. Check them out. Smilesoftware.com/TIOSS. We thank them so much for their support of the show, especially since it's one of the couple apps that I just can't live without on my Mac. So, yeah. Now, with that, it seems that Apple is planning an event in March. According to 9to5Mac, it seems like they will be unveiling the next generation Apple Watch, an iPhone 6C.
None of a...
Don't.
Yeah. On one hand, it seems too early, but on the other hand, that's almost about the time that they introduced the first Apple Watch. We just had to wait a while to get it.
April 24th, the first Apple Watch was released. So, let's see. The updated device could ship a month later in April. So.
Yeah, see, that's the problem, is they're going to announce it and ship it.
Well, I mean, what is that really a big problem? Is anybody forcing you to buy it, Adam?
For me, who dropped $350 on one already?
Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
I feel your pain, Adam. I'm totally with you.
I'm going to be buying one, too, so I'm in there. But, yeah, so the... I guess these, let's talk about the fact that we want from an Apple Watch, a new Apple Watch? I guess it would be make it like a billion times faster, please. And thank you.
All I want is more battery life.
I'm good with the battery life. Battery life of my Apple Watch is good. Are you having issues where it runs out before the end of the day, or you'd like it to last more days?
I need it to last at least 2 days on charge.
Mm.
And the reason being is because I spend a lot of time up in the mountains.
Mm, yeah.
And so if I'm going to do something where I'd like to track my activity in the mountains, I can only do it if it's a single day event. If I'm going to be staying overnight out in the backcountry, then I just leave the Apple Watch behind and I don't do any of the tracking because I won't have enough power to do it.
I understand that, Jeff. I think that if Apple were to focus on any one feature they needed to focus on to get more people into Apple Watch, it's got to be on the health and fitness side. And I think the number one thing they could do to sell more Apple Watches would be to figure out how to add GPS. So they're going to have to increase the battery, but I think it would be used up by GPS functionality. But I think because of the inaccuracies that have been proven with the run tracking and all that sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
GPS has got to be one of those things. Runners don't want to take their stupid phone with them. They want to just take the watch, and I think they would sell a ton if they could solve that problem.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I do agree that's a place where Apple really needs to focus. My desire for the longer battery life is purely selfish. It has nothing to do with what's going to sell more Apple Watches.
Yeah, how could you, Jeff?
I know. I'm an ass like that.
Well,
sometimes.
That was the question. What features do we want?
Yeah,
for me, the Apple Watch does everything that I really need it to do. So I'm not sure what feature Apple could throw in there.
It needs to be faster. Absolutely. If they didn't add anything else and just made it faster, I would be so happy.
Yeah.
Because it just does not work the way that it needs to be that glanceable device. You know, if I'm walking from my car to my classroom and I want to figure out what the weather forecast is, and I get all the way from my car to the classroom and it still hasn't loaded the damn weather app.
That is an issue.
Yeah. And that has happened so many times. And I'm thinking, as I'm walking, I'm like, I feel like a jackass. I'm looking at my wrist. I'm holding it up. Now it's starting to hurt. And I could have just pulled out my phone and it would have been way faster. So, yeah, they need to make that thing faster.
Run into issues with the glances updating? Like that's been my main problem with the apps being slow, and I think it's related because I use Fantastical, and I use the Fantastical glance, and I use Carrot Weather, and I use the weather complication. I think I'm saying glances, but I meant complications.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
So yeah, the complications, sometimes I'll put my watch on in the morning and I'll have like the generic notifications and no weather information. And it's because those apps haven't sort of, I guess, launched in the background. I don't know what happens in the background, but if I go then and launch the apps, then my glances update. But they just sit there.
Yeah, I haven't had that issue. I have one third-party glance from Weather Underground as my weather glance, and that has performed pretty well.
Yeah, it doesn't happen all the time, just occasionally. And I always thought it was maybe related to, because sometimes if I don't launch those apps and I just wait, eventually it'll just kind of fix itself. So you know, only first thing in the morning.
I have noticed that also. And the only third-party complication I'm using right now is Dark Sky. And I really want to use the Fantastical complication, but it doesn't display stuff exactly the way I want. I am so fickle. It's a wonder anyone can make an app that makes me happy.
It's okay. I'm fickle too. And right. And I think that's probably why I also don't use the Fantastical app. I use default calendar
I use Fantastical on my Apple Watch all the time. I think it's far superior to Apple's calendar app there. It's just the complication that doesn't show me it doesn't show me what I want to see in the way I want to see it.
That's a bummer. Yeah, because then you can't tap it to go to your calendar.
Right, but you know it's okay. Yeah. I should shoot off an email and say here's what I would love the complication to do,
and they'll change it. It'd be the Jeff feature.
There's a couple Jeff features out there in apps.
Yeah, there are.
I believe there's some Adam features. I think there's some Michael features.
There are definitely some Michael features, some like begrudging Michael features out there. I think a lot of developers have gotten upset.
They put in features just to shut you up.
Go away. Stop talking. Fine, I'll add it. Go away. It's like, and that comes out of me like upsetting people at Macworld in person. That's the best way to get your own feature. To go right up to them.
Developer harassment.
Yeah. It's for their own good, though.
I found a friendly conversation over drinks to be very effective also.
Yeah, well, yes. when you're under 21 and you're, you know, you're there to cause some ruckus That's the most effective way to do it.
So you're being a punk-ass kid, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Good times.
Yeah, it's good time. I remember, if we're talking about me being a punk-ass kid at Macworld, I'll probably never forget that John Braun told me to run up to Steve Jobs in 2006 at Macworld and harass him. And I did. But I waited until after he was finished giving his keynote, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because John Braun.
Yeah, he likes to cause trouble.
Did he even acknowledge you?
Steve? Yeah.
So you've probably told me the story, but I want to hear it again now. What did you say to him and what did he say back to you?
Oh, I mean, it's not very interesting, but it was, so I had my third gen iPod with it was the one that was all touch. And, I don't know how I ended up doing this, but I ended up keeping it in the wrapper, all that time. And I was going to unwrap it and ask him to sign it for me. So I went up to him and I said, "Hey, Steve, can you sign my iPod?" And he said, "Not right now, but find me later."
Man.
Like that's going to happen.
Best passive aggressive blow off ever.
Yeah. I don't even feel bad about it. Especially considering there was another, I don't remember what the guy was trying to get out of Steve. Maybe it was an autograph or something like that. Oh yeah, it was, because Steve said, "You don't want my autograph," to this guy, and the look on this guy's face was like his puppy just died.
Oh my god!
And I was like, man, I feel bad for that guy. I got the best blow off.
Yeah, your blow off is pretty awesome.
Yeah, because I thought he was really going to do it.
So I'll just be hanging out over here.
Yeah. Yeah, I was following. I followed him all around when he walked from the stage all around the Macworld floor, and I followed him around, and then I realized he's probably not gonna be doing that. So, yeah, but I did talk to Johnny Ive, and
cool.
I told you about that, right? I actually talked to him a couple different Macworlds. He's far less, or he was at the time, way less mobbed than Steve ever was. And,
which makes sense because everyone was fawning all over the rock star.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway,
I've actually never had a conversation with an Apple executive.
Really?
I did talk to Woz, but
I've been on a show with Woz. Now that I think about it,
you were probably you've probably been on more than one show with Woz. He's been on this show.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, so I've been on a couple of shows with Woz.
Yeah. Maybe we should get, I bet we should get Scott Forstall on the show.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
You have to introduce him as Hair Force One.
No,
that's not Hair Force One. That's, what the heck is his name?
Wait, who is Hair Force One?
That's who I'm trying to think. He's not
Federighi.
Yeah, Federighi.
Oh, that's right.
I would love to have Federighi on. He's great.
No. Scott Forstall.
But Forstall would be.
He got fired. He got thrown under the bus for
maps.
For maps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should have had breakfast before starting the show.
I would love to have Scott Forstall on. I think we should bring Scott Forstall back.
And I was going to say, didn't he also get thrown under the bus because it was him and Steve who liked the skeuomorphic design?
And now things are so much better with buttons that we don't know are buttons.
Yeah.
Why make a button that looks like a button when it can look like text?
A rounded rectangle.
No, it doesn't look like a rounded rectangle.
You can't
now. It looks
argue
like
with logic
That's
like
true.
That.
It's just text, right?
It's just text. Okay, but this is obviously we're
tangenting away from
the. We're like going way down the rabbit hole, or the rat hole here. But I just want to mention that, and I probably have before, but I have a lot of really smart friends who know a lot about technology and are very comfortable with it. Who, until I explained it to them, did not realize that the little in Maps, the little blue car. to the left of the bubble that's on the pin, that little blue car will actually get you the directions. It'll start turn by turn if you press that, because they don't realize it's a button. It just looks like a little thing.
It looks like a little icon.
It's just an icon. So I have very smart friends who, like, for years were going through tapping the button, scrolling all the way down to the bottom, going, take me here, please, because I hate you, Siri, and then go. Instead of just pressing one button, it's just banana cakes.
All right, so I have a news flash.
Nobody cares?
No, 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 no. An update on something we were talking about earlier.
Okay. A bunch from your original iPhone?
So, in iOS, I'm trying to find the version number.
It's probably
3.1.3.
Yeah.
In the contact app.
Yeah.
There is a search bar right at the top.
And it doesn't jump away?
No. Well, it scrolls away, but it's there at the top. So if you scroll to the top of the screen, I mean, when it comes up, it's right above the A, just like you said, and it's there at the top when you first open the app. If you scroll down, it will be hidden.
You know,
it slides under the title bar, but beyond that, it is absolutely there. And I think that's how it was in version 1, too.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So, yeah, I'll talk to Scott Forstall.
This device is still surprisingly usable.
Dude,
you know,
yeah,
the more
it is.
I think about it, the funnier it sounds to me to have Scott Forstall on and keep referring to him as Air Force One and have him say, that's not me.
That's not me, guys. Do you think he would say anything? It'd be funnier if he didn't say anything.
Let's have him on and find out.
God. Yeah, not only are we going to get this, like, get on the show, but we're also going to make fun of him. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway,
Tiny Wings.
Okay. Shut up. So in addition to the Tiny Wings. Oh, I thought you meant like what's that other game? Flappy Bird. Anyway, March Apple Watch. Also, more impressive, maybe a new 4-inch iPhone. So according to Ming-Chi Kuo, who seems to know all about Apple stuff, he believes that there is going to be a new version of a 4-inch iPhone. It's going to have a colorful metal casing with curved cover glass like the iPhone 6, NFC for Apple Pay, so Touch ID as well, and an A9 chip of all things.
Wow.
I don't know if I'm going to buy the A9 for a dollar. But I mean, everything else kind of makes sense. A8 chip seems more likely, considering the A9 is the 6S chip, right?
Right.
So I would believe the 6 chip. But
yeah.
But everything else, I mean, this is not the first rumor of that sort with the colorful metal casing and the first quarter sort of thing.
I'm curious on the timing. There was another rumor floating around that the release time of it seems to be in flux depending upon the rumor that you're looking at. Although, you know, with Kuo, I would tend to lean towards his speculation.
Yeah.
But logically, there was a rumor floating around that Apple would release it and it wouldn't be a 6C, it would be a 7C. And they'd release it along with the whole 7 lineup update. And that seems to, that I would think that would be a better thing for Apple to do. To be like, here is the new lineup, and we have, you know, the 7, the 7 Plus, and the 7C.
So you're talking second, third quarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I would not be surprised by a first quarter 6C.
But so then do they keep the 6C around and then they launch the 7s and so you have 6C, 7, 7 Plus? That just seems weird.
That does seem,
like,
weird.
Why wouldn't they want to get onto a line where, again,
it's all the same number.
I like the idea of Apple getting back to their old way of doing things. So
just
you
calling
have
it iPhone.
Good, better, best for iPhones. So here's your good one. We've got the 7C. Here's your better, the 7. And here's the best, 7 Plus. And then I, you know, because I want them to get back to the same thing with their notebooks and desktops too, the whole four square sort of selling scheme, consumer desktop, consumer laptop, pro desktop, pro laptop.
Well, what I would like to see more than anything would be, here's the iPhone, the current iPhone line, and it is comprised of a 4-inch iPhone, the, what is it, 5-inch is the 6?
4.7.
4.7 and the Plus. So you have the small, right, regular, and large.
Correct. So that would be
with no differences in terms of
Plus, right?
No differences in terms of the capabilities in the devices either.
Well, so that falls in line with this A9 concept, right?
Right. That is true.
So so putting it as a 6C, making it an A9, and launching it in February kind of makes sense. But now Apple's off in terms of their timing of updating phones. So you're always going to have the C line.
The lagging C.
Like 6 months behind. It just seems, it feels weird from.
Well, I mean, does it? Because.
Well, is it 6 months behind or is it 6 months ahead of the rest of the updates?
I think it would be behind.
As far as purchasing goes.
Well, the thing.
You have people that have been holding out for the next big iPhone release. And then mid-cycle, you get this. How many people are going to say, you know, that's actually good enough for what I need. I'll buy that, and I'm not going to wait for the big update this fall.
Well, yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. The way I would interpret it would be Apple trying to stagger the lower-cost iPhone to try and get more sales of the bigger ones.
I was going to say that. That was the one thing I was thinking of that would be, okay, this is where it makes sense.
And they would stick to that cycle.
Oh, you've got the old one. You know, that's the old model. That's why it's cheap.
Well, I mean, this wouldn't really be represented as the old model. It would just be the smaller.
Right. But I mean, to your point, though, it becomes, okay, if I want the newest, latest and greatest, you know, I'm going to get the 7, right? I'm not going to buy the 6C now.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's current gen and I want the latest, greatest.
But the issue again is that it's still snubbing the customers who just simply don't want that big of a phone. They want something that's fully featured, but they just don't want it so big.
Right.
I feel like there are a lot of users who feel that way.
Again, that's why I brought this up, is there was this 7C, 7, 7 Plus rumor, and I don't think Apple's going to do that. I would like them to do that.
I think that would be a
better way to handle this. But I think the rumor we're hearing, I think we are going to get a 6C update, and it's always going to be sort of, you know, just ahead of the more recent update, which I guess, you know, has its advantages too. I mean, there's pluses and minuses to both things. It's just customer-wise, I would like to see a simplification of the lineup, just like you said. And it's like we've got small, medium, large, or, you know, good, better, best, whatever you want to call it in the lineup.
Well, I think that
they all come out at the same time with the same features and, you know, with just slightly different features and specs, but I mean, all the same sort of base specs.
That would make me happy.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah, so I don't think there's anything more on.
What do we think about the metal casing? So it's going to be like, the colors aren't going to be like the standard iPhone colors, right? When he's saying colorful casing, he's talking about more like the iPod lineup where it's anodized, like blue, yellow, green, whatever the colors end up.
That's my assumption.
Yeah. That's what I would assume. How do you even find iPods on the Apple site now?
They're in the music section.
Oh, they're in music. Okay. Or if you scroll to the bottom, I guess you can go to iPod. Yeah. Those are good colors, especially that blue. That blue is nice. Blue, pink, gold, black, silver.
Yeah, I think there's going to be fewer colors. I would suspect with the iPhone, there aren't going to have a limited color range.
Well, I mean, if you look at the 5C, right?
Is there three or four colors? Four colors?
You can't even get to
white,
that
yellow,
5C.
Blue, pink, green.
And green.
Oh, so there's five.
You can't even find the 5C. Where the heck is it?
It's because they discontinued it.
Did they?
Yeah, the 5C was just very quietly discontinued.
I guess it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, huh. They made the 5S. It took its slot.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Which is why we're hearing about them potentially updating, I think, the 4-inch lineup.
Yeah, so the 5C had like a pink, a yellow, blue, and a green, and a white. So... probably along that same line. Moving on, Best Buy. From now through the end of the year, it seems, you can get $100 off any Apple Watch. Merry Christmas.
That's that's a pretty substantial discount.
Yeah, especially for that entry level.
Too bad the new one's coming out in March.
Well, you know, I'm thinking like, gosh. Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys right now. Do you think it's a good or bad idea to get to buy one for my mom for Christmas / her birthday? Because today is her birthday. And
happy
Christmas
birthday,
is,
Michael's mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy birthday,
thank
Michael's
you.
Mom.
Her. So Christmas, of course, is just around the corner as well. I don't know that she hasn't asked. I don't think she's asked for an Apple Watch. I feel like I would remember that. I don't know if it makes sense to get her one. Because gifting someone an Apple Watch is a really interesting proposition, because it's, you know, it's one of those things where you either know you need one or want one, or you know you don't.
It depends on, yeah, it depends on.
And even at $250, it's like she could get something that she likes a lot more for even less, you know.
Does she have a new Apple TV?
Not the newest. I gave her my hand-me-downed my previous Apple TV.
Does she like that?
It's sitting in her car, I found. It's funny. Oh. She went back to Chicago for a month or so, and I gave it to her. I was like, hey, you know, you can have this. And so I thought she was taking it with her. And so I talked to her on the phone the other day, and I said, hey, how are you liking the Apple TV? She goes, oh, it's still in California. It's in the backseat of my car. What? So
I would say probably no on the Apple Watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just based on that story.
Well, she said, yeah, she left it so that she can use it when she gets back, because she has a Roku in Chicago.
I'm sorry.
Well,
it's not. I don't have to use the Roku.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm still with Adam.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. As much as I want her to enjoy an Apple Watch, I don't think I can get her something cheaper and something she'd like more.
Yeah.
But yeah, $100 off. And I believe if you already purchased an Apple Watch from Best Buy from, like, is it November 1 or potentially November, what is it? Whenever Best Buy started their holiday return policy.
Are they doing that just like Apple does? I didn't know Apple had a holiday return policy.
They do have that, yeah. So, gosh, we should look at both of them. You look at the Apple one, I'll look at
Best
Buy.
Well, I know Apple's because I used it. Because I was talking about, because I got my Apple Smart Keyboard, right, for my iPad Pro, but I also had the Logitech one.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that the Apple keyboard is the one that I want to keep.
Yeah.
And I was talking on my podcast, and I said, oh, I'm going to sell the Logitech Create keyboard. And I received a nice email from somebody who is in the business services division of an Apple retail store. And he said, hey, by the way, we have holiday returns, so you can just take that back to the Apple store and get your full credit
back. Get your full
back.
Money back.
So anything purchased from November 1st on is eligible for holiday returns. So,
yep, there you go. And
I think that goes through the end of the year.
Yes, through December 31st for Apple. And then I think it's, you have through January 15th or so. 14th, maybe, for
Apple.
I think
it's the 14th.
To return it, yeah. So, and it's same exact deal with Best Buy, as it turns out. November 1st through the 31st, anything purchased through those dates, you have until January 15th to return to Best Buy. So if you purchased an Apple Watch for the standard price or anything greater than the $100 off at Best Buy through those dates, just go back to Best Buy, show them the receipt, say, I want some money back. And they should, usually Best Buy is really accommodating. And if they don't let you do that, if they don't just say they're going to give you some money back, tell them, okay, well, I would like to return this and then buy it back for the discounted price. And then they'll give you your money back.
Awesome.
They're really flexible. Trust me. I once got them to price match a refurb MacBook Pro for a new one. So check them out. Battery case.
Oh God.
Everybody's so excited about
this.
Don't
call it a hump.
Yeah, you're not supposed to call it a hump.
Even you'll get angry emails from Tim Cook.
There's a giant hump on the back of this case, Tim Cook. So, I don't really hate it.
I'm actually over my disdain for it, and I have indifference.
There was a lot of like violent distaste for this for this case.
Like, call it vitriol.
Yeah.
I had a pretty visceral reaction to it initially, and I still kind of am not thrilled about it, but whatever.
Okay. So, all right. So you've probably seen it already. So it's a soft silicone case for the 6 and 6S.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is coated in soft silicone, mm-hmm. but yeah. it looks like it's stiff in the bottom half. And then the top half is kind of the floppy part. So yes. It's not like an all floppy silicone case.
Yeah.
Right?
So the floppy bit is at the top, and and I'm glad that Tim Cook was able to chime in to point out the fact that you don't often see an iPhone battery case that is anything but a hard plastic that you have to separate pieces.
Right.
To put in there. So this is a soft silicone case. It looks very nice, other than the fact that there is a, you know, an iPod just kind of, it's about to give birth.
An iPod.
It's like a snake that ate an iPod. And it's just sitting there, and you can tell that it's there. But the idea is, I understand the thought process. Okay, let's make it so that it's flexible at the top so you can just squish it in there. All right, well then we want to make it symmetric so that the top and the bottom both have the same amount of negative space.
Sure. Well, and you can get it into docks that were designed for just the thinness of the
very true
the original iPhone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So beyond the weird hump, I think that it's a great accessory. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great battery mm-hmm. case. The reasons that I believe iFixit has determined that the capacity of the battery is slightly larger than the one that's in there in the phone.
It's like 1800 milliamp hours
versus like 1750, something like that. It's not going to give you a charge from 0 to 100%. And that's of course, just because
it doesn't even work that way, right?
Energy losses. Yeah. So the point of the most interesting thing about this case is it seems that due to the extra integration that Apple can bring, it's going to provide longer longevity to your phone battery because it has no on-off switch. You basically put it in there. It interfaces with a lightning connector, and I believe you can sync. Can you sync through that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can charge. So
you can charge and sync.
You charge the case also while it's docked.
Right.
To the phone.
Yeah. Know? So the idea is when you have your phone in this case, it's on, there's no on-off switch, which I never understood the on-off switch on the battery cases.
Well, because with a traditional battery case, a lot of times the use case is you're using your phone. It's getting low on battery. You want to charge it up. And depending upon how much juice you need, if you're near the end of the day, maybe you only want to charge it up 50% because you know you're going to go dock it and you want to leave, you know, juice in the battery for another charge another day.
Right. So then you flip the switch on the battery.
Yeah. With Apple's case, you're not going to get that choice.
It doesn't seem, I still don't get it. I still don't get it.
Well, a lot of people use it that way. A lot of people use battery cases or carry around portable batteries to just get a little extra charge.
I think people overthink what they're doing. I don't think there's any reason to do that.
You don't probably travel that much. The people who travel come to rely on those sorts of things because they know they're going to be able to dock it at the end of the day. And maybe they do or do not charge up the battery.
I just don't understand why you want to conserve the case.
Well, let's say you need to be able to ration the power from the case over multiple days.
That's why. Or you're a backpacker.
Because you can charge your phone, but you can't charge the case.
Well, yeah, let's go back to what Adam was just tossing out.
Okay.
Let's say you're backpacking with it.
Okay.
And now you want to ration the charge that you're getting across multiple days.
because the phone doesn't deplete always at the same rate. It depends on how you're using it, right?
Yeah.
So do you understand how you might just want to charge, like you're nearing the end of the day, your iPhone's not totally depleted, but you want to just charge it up a little bit to get through the end of the day?
It just doesn't seem energetically efficient to
me. Well,
but anyway, so that this is what
people use it.
And I think that they're okay. So my, you guys have your opinion and I have my opinion. We'll just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, so I guess this is Apple's opinion as well, is that there's no need for the Switch because there's no Switch. Right. And the idea is you're going to deplete the battery case before you even start in on the battery in your phone. So it's not going
to
charge
your phone. That's the only way it works. It starts with, it's designed, I think that's the smart part, right? Is it's designed so that it uses the external battery pack first, and then when that's depleted, it switches over to the internal battery.
Right, yeah. Which conserves the charge cycles on your internal battery.
Right, so what Apple designed is a battery extender.
Yeah.
So that, I don't think Apple is looking at this in the same way that Mophie looks at their battery pack cases.
Which is a portable charger?
Which, yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. This, yeah. I think Apple has a very different philosophy about their battery case.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
So then I'm curious if you like this concept, what do you think about the argument that why didn't they just make it a millimeter or two thicker and just give us more battery?
I don't know about that.
my guess is that this is a very intentional choice, and it's that they minimize compatibility issues with docks and other accessories.
No, I didn't mean on the battery pack. I meant in the phone itself. Like,
oh.
Why, if they obviously understand that, like Michael was saying, people need more battery. And
no, I never said that.
Have less charge cycles and... Yeah, you.
I'm not okay. You make sure that my arguments are very separate. I don't have any issue with my battery on my phone.
Neither do I. Okay, and I'm not implying that. But again, if internally it seems like if Apple's producing a battery pack, they recognize that people with iPhones want more battery, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the reason for developing this is so that they can sell it to people who have said, "I don't get enough battery out of my iPhone."
Yeah.
Okay. We still have the stupid little camera bump
dude,
on the back of the iPhone.
I'm fully with
the camera
you.
Bump, and they just put the 1800 milliamps or even 900 milliamp hours of extra battery all the way across the back of my iPhone, and then we didn't need a battery case. I'm just saying, as a separate conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I am with you on that. I would love that. I don't need the stupid camera bump. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. So I don't know. That's my problem with this case is it feels weird all the way around. It feels like an acknowledgement of Apple that we didn't put enough battery in the iPhone.
I don't see that.
So here's this other thing.
I don't agree with that. A lot of people think that. A lot of people see it that way. I don't understand why they make that leap. Because I don't. I and a lot of other people
don't have a
problem with the battery life.
Gotcha. I don't either. I'm not in that camp, and that's why I won't buy
a battery case.
And I haven't been using the battery packs that I have.
Yeah. I have battery packs already. Too, and I never ever use them.
I do use them when I travel now, because sometimes when you're traveling, you can't always get to an outlet.
Sure, that's true. But yeah, so I think that it. I don't see it as an admission of a battery crisis or whatever. However you want to spin it, I think that it's just. Apple seeing, they're more just acknowledging the fact that there are users out there, power users, I think is probably an apt term.
Right.
That want a battery, an external battery case, some way to extend their battery because they're heavy users. And Apple is providing
battery in it.
their own option for it. It effectively doubles the battery life.
It's $100. This is for people who want
the Apple
an
experience
Apple logo on their battery case, really.
I mean,
there's a certain amount of brand aspect to this, and there's also a certain amount to this in my mind of Apple just it's they did it because they noticed a lot of people in Apple retail stores buying battery cases, and they realized that they were leaving money on the table that they could be capturing themselves.
Well, and
because there's no other reason for practically. Here's where I got frustrated with this after, you know, the initial shock of the design thing, and I got over that. But after that, I looked at it and went, okay, this has got to be a pure money play, because there's third-party solutions that I think are better, provide more battery, all these other things. So Apple spent a bunch of design and engineering resources internally, which in my mind are already stretched thin, because there's like serious issues going on that aren't being looked at or addressed, to build a battery case.
Yeah. Do you think
to fill a need that was being fulfilled already in the marketplace?
So it's some kind of money grab.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And it's smart. I like it when Apple makes smart business decisions, but I think that's why also a lot didn't have to go into the design, because it's just like, okay, we just want a battery case with an Apple logo on it. Let's put this thing together and figure out how to do it. And it's got, I understand after looking at it, some nice advantages of being able to peel back the silicone case, slide it in there.
It'll tell you what the actual battery level is on the device, on your phone.
Which is good, because the actual LED is on the inside of the case, so when you're charging it.
Yeah, even if it didn't have an Apple logo on it, if this had an in-case logo on it, for example, I would probably get this one, because it seems to offer superior advantages, just given that
it's $99, and you can, for $99, you can get a battery case that's just as thin, doesn't have the hump, and has double the amount of battery.
Actually, for $99, you can get two of them.
Yeah, you can get two of them, because you get them for half the price. Good point. So
it just seems more integrated to me.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't get that. I guess with the software, with this.
Yeah, I do like the on-screen stuff.
Pull up Notification Center or the power widget and see that. Okay.
I like that. I like the decision to not try and charge one battery with another battery, because that's, you're just losing then.
Yeah.
So
I can see that.
I understand why they made all the decisions they did. Am I going
to
get one?
Another problem with some of the third party ones is you have to have an extra cable. Right.
This is also true. Yeah, so you get a lightning, you get a lightning cable right at the bottom, which is nice.
Well, it's just pass through. So you just charge it like you would normally charge your phone, and it's going to figure out, okay, I'm going to charge the external battery pack, or I'm going to charge the phone. Yeah. I don't think you have to, you don't have to take it out of the case to charge your phone.
Yep. Last question. So I see the little mic and speaker holes. Are those just acoustic cavities, or are they actual
I don't know,
external thingies?
I haven't gone to look at one. That's the other unfair thing in me commenting on the design of it, is I really need to probably get one in my hands before I
take a look at it.
And I don't know if it has a built-in mic, but I do know it has a built-in antenna.
Oh, that's so the other thing,
So it's supposed to improve overall reception.
Yeah. And the reviews of the device are, most of them say you get over the hump thing very quickly, and you even find that it feels more ergonomically satisfying when using it with the hump.
It's hard to tell from this picture, Michael, but it looks like the mic and speaker holes are just
holes.
Cavities.
Yeah. And then for what it's worth, I fix it, tore one down, just fun. The battery is very difficult to get out, as opposed to the, I guess I didn't realize this until I started looking into it, but to pull the battery out of, iPhones these days, there are two little, tabs. So they're glued in. Yes. But you pull down, it's like those hooks that you can hang on the wall, the adhesive hooks. And when you're finished with them, you pull the little tab off, and the glue just kind of disappears. They use that same idea with iPhone batteries. That does not appear to be the case with this case, though. So
it's totally sealed.
I would have been absolutely
shocked if there had been any repairability.
Well, they gave it a 2. iFixit gave it a 2 out of 10. Yeah. I think the issue is that you have to pull the felt off. But once you pull the felt off, so if you don't care that you've pulled the felt off, you can pretty easily get at the battery, other than the fact that you have to, you know, heat it up to melt the glue. But yeah, we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Let's move on to Walmart. And so Walmart has announced Walmart Pay using what appears to be the MCX technology.
Except that instead of linking directly to your bank account, it lets you use credit cards.
Which makes no damn sense to me why they won't just allow Apple Pay at this point. Because if you're going through cards...
Well, yeah, if they accept thing. Apple Pay, they're not getting to collect all kinds of extra data on their shoppers.
Yeah. The other difference, it seemed to me, that I think is important versus the currency thing is... Because you activate it through the Walmart app, I think they take out one of the QR code scan steps, right? Because with currency, because they don't know what retailer you're at, wasn't there a mechanism where you had to open the app, you had to scan the QR code, that would tell the app, okay, you're at ABC store, and then you would also scan the code where the store, or no, was that not the case? Is it always just one scan?
I thought it was a single scan. Okay. I may be wrong, but hey, you know, if they ever actually like really rolled it out, we could check it out. And so the way it works with Walmart Pay is you launch the app, you go to the Walmart Pay section in the Walmart app, then you have to activate your camera in the app, and then you scan the barcode that's showing on the POS terminal. Right. And then it does your transaction.
Yeah, and you can do that. I mean, they did point out you can do that as they're sort of scanning your items in there.
Right.
So you don't have to, it's not like you have to wait. I think there's still going to be problems, though, here's the issue I have with this stuff versus just using Apple Pay or Android Pay. Those are integrated into the operating system. So they're just there and available. Like all your cards are there. I just double tap, you know, the home button, or just even just tap my phone to the NFC terminal and boom, right? It's all there. I don't have to go searching and finding through an app and figure out where's that app. And the problem is if every retailer is going to integrate this in their own app, now I have to have an app for every retailer that I go to, and I have to sit and find that app before I can actually use the payment system.
Yep.
Right. So it's like just like digging. It's the same thing as digging through your wallet to find the right card. And yeah, it's not a huge deal. And yeah, you can do it while they're scanning your stuff in. But there's still going to be people that are going to forget to do it. And they're like going to go, oh, wait, they probably won't even have their phone out.
Oh, wait, I have an app.
Now they've got to dig through and find the app. And, you know, as opposed to even if they didn't have their phone out with Apple Pay, right, they dig their phone out and they just donk the thing. Right. Yeah. And you're done.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so it still adds complexity to the system.
For what
it seems
worth,
better than it was, though.
It does have some advantages, and I'll grant them that. The advantages are that it works with basically any smartphone that has a camera.
Yep, that's good.
You don't have to worry about the NFC capabilities of the phone. So there is that. Otherwise, yes, I don't know. Now, I wonder if the card terminals that Walmart has, I wonder if those even have NFC capability, the ones that have chip capability.
The one they show in the Walmart post is one of the new, what's that company?
VeriSign?
I keep wanting to call it Incipio, but that's not right. It's the one with the little red.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the newer terminals that do support the NFC.
Oh, those do?
I've used Apple Pay at those similar branded terminals.
Yeah, now that I think about it, I believe I've done that too. I can't figure out which one it is, but yeah, so whatever. Walmart, you're cool.
Again, the weirdest part about this is, are they using the currency technology? Because it seems similar. They are part of currency, yet they're allowing credit cards.
yeah,
in their payment, in their implementation. So has currency changed that policy, or is it available to be adapted dependent upon what the retailer wants to accept?
Well, I mean,
that's what I'm confused on.
Maybe. Either way, it's losing that benefit of making it cheaper.
Right.
But whatever. Oh, I wanted to ask, do you, and correct me if I've already asked this, but do you guys know if the chip cards, those do produce a one-time only use code, right? That's how those work. Is that correct?
I don't know.
I don't know about that technology.
All right. Well, I need to get.
Maybe somebody in our audience does.
Yeah, yeah. If somebody out there knows exactly what sort of privacy and all that happens at the chip cards, let us know.
And Genico is the payment terminal.
There we go.
Ah,
yeah, there you go. Dropbox.
Or Genico.
No. Dropbox is shutting down Mailbox. And Carousel, I don't know what Carousel is. I've never heard of that.
Is that the photo thing?
Photo storage.
Okay. So the more relevant to us, the Mailbox app, which was my go-to mail app for a long time. Until they stopped developing it. They put out a beta for the Mac and then just kind of sort of dropped the ball. The ball stopped rolling after Dropbox purchased them, basically. If you use Mailbox, it will no longer work after February 26th.
You're going to have to find another mail app. I hope somebody recommends one.
I sure do. I hope so, too. I wonder who will. I guess there's not much more to say about that.
Nope.
Yeah. And then I enjoyed this study. Are you looking at the list? Did I send you guys show notes?
Yeah, you sent me the list, and I'm laughing because, duh.
What is the ratio? I'm looking at this. So Apple
Maps.
Three
times more than Google Maps. Apple Maps is now used 3 times more than Google Maps on the iPhone. Well, duh. Because guess what? If you want to integrate Maps into your application, what do you have to use?
Yeah, Apple Maps. You have to use Apple Maps.
But Apple Maps is pretty good these days.
No, it's good. It's not a slam on Apple Maps. It's just a stupid study because, it's not.
I don't think it's a stupid study.
It's a dumb stat because, of course, and I do have other apps that integrate Google Maps, but I think it's much more difficult. So Path of Least Resistance for consumers and developers says Apple Maps is going to be more popular on the iPhone.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And actually, I stopped using Google Maps on my iPhone completely.
Same.
Because I was actually getting much better results by using Apple Maps.
I think it really still depends on where you live and those sorts of things. I'm Apple Maps as well, but I know it doesn't service everybody out there. So,
yeah.
The other weird thing that's on that's not in our notes, and I don't know if you guys have messed with this, but was it Conterra? It's now available on the iPhone, and we have Google Now and Siri.
What's Conterra?
I haven't tested anything other than Siri.
Oh, Cortana.
Cortana.
Conterra is like an ad thing. Cortana, Microsoft Cortana.
I can never remember what Microsoft's silly thing is called.
You must have never played Halo.
No.
Oh, yeah. You'd remember.
I was looking forward to it because it was going to be a Mac-only app, and then Microsoft bought Bungie, and then...
Let's get upset about things that happened in, like, 2001, okay? Or 2003, something like that.
Adam holds a grudge.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've never played Halo because I've never had access to it because guess what? I'm an Apple user.
Owned an Xbox.
I don't know. I'm not buying an Xbox. I have an Apple TV. That's plenty of console gaming for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not a big gamer.
I haven't even upgraded my Wii to a Wii U yet.
I never hooked my Wii back up. And now with the Apple TV, I don't feel like I have to.
Oh, yeah. You were going to send me your Wii, right?
And see, I still need my Wii because I can't play Lego Star Wars and Lego Batman.
But you will be. You hear that's going to happen.
Well, when it happens, then I can pack up my...
I think we talked about this last show. But yeah, no, Cortana. So I'm curious, you know, to try these other two things or to hear from people who have messed with Google Now and Cortana on the iPhone. I would imagine, again, the integration is the problem, right? Siri is just there and available all the time. Versus I've got to either launch an app. I don't know how these other systems work or integrate, but you still have to launch the app, right, to use it.
So that's it's my assumption.
With a personal assistant kind of application like that, I just wonder if they even stand a chance on the iPhone. But it's interesting that both companies are putting out iPhone apps for their virtual assistants.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Picks,
yeah. Jeff, go first.
Oh, right. Okay. So my pick is an app for the iPhone and iPad. Well, an iPod Touch. And it's called Home. And this is the app, excuse me, that Apple should have included with iOS for managing all of your HomeKit gear. And it works cross-platform, which most HomeKit compatible apps don't do. So like the Hue app only controls Hue stuff. And the Lutron app controls Lutron and then I think like a thermostat from another company or something. And most of these apps are very segregated. So your HomeKit stuff is just segregated, which kind of defeats the purpose. So there's this app called Home. It's $15. And it's totally worth the $15 if you're trying to do a lot of stuff with HomeKit and you have equipment from multiple manufacturers. And you have really fine-tuned control over all the settings for all of your devices. And you can group stuff together into scenes exactly the way you want. And then you can invoke the scenes through Siri or by tapping on them in the app. And it's just a magical, wonderful thing. HomeKit to me was nothing more than just a frustrating waste of my time until I bought Home.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's $15. I said that already.
$15. It has very, very poor reviews,
which really surprises me because it's really good.
Huh. And it has an Apple Watch app too.
Yes. Now, the Apple Watch app, to use that effectively, what you have to do is pick certain scenes and tag them as favorites. And those favorite scenes will show up on your Apple Watch. But I like Home so much, it's actually on the first screen of my iPhone.
Cool.
And it takes a lot to earn a place on the first screen of my iPhone.
What devices do you use it with? Because I've been considering HomeKit stuff.
I have some Hue lights. I have some Lutron smart switches. And then I have an Echo B3. And I think that's all the stuff I have hooked up to right now.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd have to go do an inventory, but I'm pretty sure that's all of it.
Nice. Adam, what is your pick?
I'm going to pick a fun little camera app that came out this week. I actually think I saw it. Nevin Morgan, I think, tweeted about this. It's developed by a friend of his, and it's called Slide, and it's a little photo app. Yeah. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it lets you do the little, I don't know if you call it perspective 3D thing. It's the little trick if you've ever seen. You take
parallax.
A picture. Huh?
Parallax?
Parallax, yeah. It uses parallax to kind of do that 3D effect. And so what you do is you open it up. It gives you a camera interface. You snap a picture, but as you're snapping it, you slide the phone left or right pretty rapidly. And then it brings up the photo, and then you select the area you kind of want to be the main area of the photo. And then it does the auto parallax where it goes back and forth. So when you're looking at the photo's kind of tilting back and forth in the background, and it gives you that 3D kind of look to your photo. And
oh, I'm watching the demo video. This is really cool.
You can share it to Instagram. You can send it as a text message. You can generate a GIF, or you can generate a little video file. that you can share out. And that's about it. I mean, that's all it does. I think it's $1.99 right now. And it's just a fun little app. If you want.
What's it called?
Little Slide.
Slide by Little Pixels.
I can't find it. How did you find it?
I typed
again, Nevin,
Slide.
Nevin Morgan tweeted about it.
So the full name is Slide-3D GIF Camera.
Oh, okay. I found it. Oh, maybe I didn't see this one.
So I just bought the crap out of that, Adam.
There's a weird artsy, and if you're easily offended, don't watch it, video on their website, too.
If you're easily
demoing
offended.
Them. Yeah, I think there's some language in it. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Well, people who listen to this show probably aren't that offended.
No. But I, again, some people, I'm throwing that out there because if you watch the video, you might be like, he said a bad word.
How much it was?
$1.99.
$1.99. Okay, found it.
Slide.camera is the website.
Cool. Is it for the Nation of Camera?
Yep.
Cool. All right. So my pick is apropos because of the whole mailbox going away. And I actually switched from Mailbox to this app because Mailbox didn't have an app for my Apple Watch, and that is Spark. We've talked about it before. It's by Readle, and it's free.
It's the email app that I use.
It's iPhone and Apple Watch only. No, there's no iPad version, unfortunately.
I think that's being worked on.
I would imagine it is. These guys, you know, it's free, right? It shouldn't be free. They really need to charge for it because they're going to.
Really?
Yeah, I think it is.
I don't know. Wow. I buy a lot of stuff from Readle, so I don't pay that. If it comes from Readle and someone tells me it's good, I usually just buy it. I don't even.
Yeah, I'm surprised because usually Readle, they're good about charging like real money for things.
Yeah, appropriate prices.
Yes. Yeah, appropriate prices. And they really should charge. I would give them money for this.
Yeah, it has replaced, Spark has replaced mail.app, you know, or mail app on my iPhone. It's in my dock.
Yeah.
It has my mail application.
Yeah,
so.
Same here. Yeah, Spark is great. So check them out. It's free. It works on your Apple Watch. I think it's a native app. I don't know. Haven't messed with it recently to see. I guess I could try it right now. Press the little airplane mode button. Open the Spark app. And good podcast.
Oh, and an update came out for it yesterday on the 11th.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it's not native on the watch yet. But it does work. So by native I mean it's not it doesn't run solely on the watch. But
yeah, so it could be quicker.
It works. It could be quicker, but it works.
The one feature that a lot of people with mail had emailed me about, or the mailbox that they wanted to know about, was like saving attachments to Dropbox. And so Readle, Spark does have that capability. It actually integrates with a bunch of services.
Yeah, they have a lot. Dropbox, Google Drive, Pocket, Instapaper, Box, all that kind of stuff. So.
And I really like the smart inbox feature. That was the big thing for me. I've also not messed around with, they have like widgets too. So like down in the lower right hand corner, I think you have a little thing and you can get into,
they have a lot of stuff in
contracts
this thing.
And to-do items and all that sort of stuff. So it's really integrated in a lot of ways. I don't use it to its fullest capabilities.
Yeah, neither do I. There's a lot of stuff here.
So but that is just a feature to me. That's a benefit. So you can use what you need to use and not use the extra stuff. But if you want all those power features, there's a lot of power features built
into
it.
Yeah, quick replies, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's cool. Okay, so that's Spark, and it's free. You can find all the iPhone picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. You can review the show in iTunes, leave a rating, tell a friend. We always appreciate that. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address. Our sponsor this week is Smile with Text Expander. So check them out, smilesoftware.com/TIOSS, and get a free trial of Text Expander and change your life. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen, you can find him at the Maccast, maccast.com, and at Maccast on Twitter. Thanks for being here.
I'm just looking through this. Sorry, I got distracted looking through this feature update list. Jeff was right. Yeah, customizable snooze and snooze alerts, a new way for attachments. And what I got hung up on was it says you can attach links to cloud files now.
What's that?
You can attach a link to a file that you put on Dropbox, Google Drive, or OneDrive.
So that's cool. So the attachment doesn't have to be local on your iOS device.
Oh, nice. Yeah, someone needs to tell them to start charging money.
Anyway, yes, you can find me all those other places.
Yes.
MacCast everywhere on social media, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, themacobserver.com. It's not the Mac Observer. What happens if you type themacobserver.com?
It goes to macobserver.com.
Oh, nice. What about macabsorber.com?
It goes wherever you want.
I need to buy that, or you need to buy that.
I should just buy that.
Send it to Fresh Brewed Tales.
Yeah, I'll put up a graphic for that page where it's just like an amoeba with Max being pulled into it.
Yes, please. Yeah, you can illustrate that with your iPad Pro.
I can totally do that.
I just tried it. It went to the Always website.
The Always website?
Well, yeah. That's interesting. That's not where it's supposed to go.
Or those feminine hygiene products.
Oh. Wait, Mac Absorber?
Mac Absorber.
That's not what happened for me. It says Safari can't find the server.
Sorry, it was a bad joke.
It's a bad... Hey, yeah, I'm sorry. I stepped all over your...
Horrible
thing
joke
there.
Wow. Ruined the punchline.
Well so you can see Jeff at the Mac Absorber, TMO Daily Observations podcast. Check that out. And he's on Twitter at Jake Amet. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Sure thing. It's always awesome.
And yeah, we're going to have to figure out our holiday schedule. We'll talk after. We'll talk offline, but online, but off. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And yeah, with that, we'll talk to you next time on the iOS show.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, yuck.